I always want to try to keep up to date with what's going on with sharding. Like, for example, PG Dog is a sharding pooler, and the other project I've been tracking has been Multigrez, of course. Well, they released about four blog posts this week going into more detail about some of their architectural decisions, so we'll be covering that. But I hope you, your friends, family, and coworkers continue to do well. Our first piece of content is actually an architectural diagram before we get to the blog posts. And I think seeing a visual will help you understand the architecture of the system before we jump into some of the blog posts. But in terms of Multigrez, they basically have designed what they're calling a multi-gateway. So this is essentially the gateway into the Multigrez sharding solution. There is also a multi-pooler, and the multi-poolers exist on the Postgres instance. Now, the intention is for this to operate within Kubernetes, but basically on the host itself, you would have the multi-pooler running as well as your Postgres system running. And the multi-pooler has all the connections, but it's the multi-gateway that actually passes the application connections through to the pooler. So they actually have separated these responsibilities. In PG Bouncer, they're identical essentially. And of course, it has other components explained here. When you look at a multiple database deployment, basically you can have multiple gateways, and of course, you have as many multi-poolers as you have Postgres instances. So there's two gateways and two systems, and then they have an even more complex diagram here where you have typically three instances, each with a multi-pooler, and you can have one or more multi-gateways that interact with them. So that's the basic architecture. Let's jump into the first blog post, which is Two Jobs, Two Processes, Why Multigrez Has Its Own Connection Pooler. And the first thing they talk about is what is Multigrez? Well, it's basically Vitess, which is the sharding solution for MySQL. So it's basically Vitess for Postgres. And like so many other choices, they've decided to make their own pooler and not use PG Bouncer. It feels like this is the third time I've covered people not using PG Bouncer in blog posts over the last month or so. But basically, all the changes they wanted to make to it would really be a fork of it. And do we really need another fork of PG Bouncer? No. So they actually built their own pooling solution and actually split it into two services, as they mention here. And their core objective is to bring sharding to Postgres. And they want it to work so that any single client connection has to reach any Postgres instance in the cluster. Aggregation happens at the top, and both of those things should essentially exist in one process, something that accepts client connections, parses queries, and decides where they go. And that's the multi-gateway. So all the applications talk to multi-gateways. You can have one, you can have two, three, however many you need. Then you have a per Postgres instance connection pool. So that's the thing that holds the backend connections open to Postgres. That is the multi-pooler, and it exists on the instance upon which Postgres is running. So if this is a Kubernetes cluster and you have three hosts with a Postgres database on each of the hosts, you would need a multi-pooler on each of those hosts holding those Postgres connections. And the other component, which they don't talk about too much here, is the multi-orchestrator that handles all of the high availability and the coordination of the different services. Now, they do admit there are some disadvantages because there's now an extra hop on the query path, basically gateway to pooler over GPC. And of course, their pooler does a few extra things compared to a vanilla pooler. Now, some other things they decided on is to use per user connection pools. So this is set this way predominantly for security reasons. And secondly, you can choose to pool without choosing a mode. So in PG Bouncer, when you start it up, you generally choose whether you want it to be session-based or transaction-based, usually. But Multigrez is smart enough to figure out on its own which mode of behavior a given query needs. And I think there's a blog post that talks more about that in detail. And they also do prepared statement consolidation across gateways. And that's in the blog post, one parse per query, no matter how many gateways. So that leads us to the second post, per user pools that share fairly. So each user gets their own pool, and the pool's backend connections are authenticated as that user. There's no impersonation that can happen with other pooling products. And the main reason they did it was for security. You know, it makes security audits easier. But the cost is you have to share a connection budget. And they're using a maximum fairness algorithm essentially to decide how to handle this. And they show you a visual representation, basically how that works. But the reality is I've only seen for large applications only a couple users usually, so maybe it's not so bad of a disadvantage. But even if you have the same user, you could also have different sessions for them if they're using session variables. Because if you remember, the solution tries to interpret what queries are happening and does this particular connection need a session, and it needs to see that session again when it comes back from the application. So and then they discuss how that bucketing is kind of happening, and they discuss some of the costs related to that. Next blog post, pooling without choosing a mode. This goes into that in more detail, where the system essentially looks at what queries are being sent and decides whether to do, I think, just transaction mode and session mode. And based upon things outside of typical transactions that would happen, maybe you have temp table creations, copies, a portal, which is basically a prepared statement bound to specific parameter values, listen for Postgres's listen notify capabilities. Well, they basically roll these up into what they call three pool tiers. So you have the regular pool, which is pretty much doing transaction pooling. So there's no reason to reserve the connection. It can immediately be given to someone else. It's recyclable, and most queries get served here. Then they have a reserved pool that connections have some reservation reason, like was mentioned. Maybe it created a temporary table, for example. And this is pinned to a single client, but they can move back to the regular pool when all the reasons clear. So it sounds a little bit like AWS's RDS proxy. If you use session variables, it's going to pin the connection. It sounds like it's pretty much the same thing. So you don't want every connection to be using session variables, because then everything is essentially pinned. So you do need to take care with how you're using this. And then they have an admin pool for administrative actions like terminating the backend. Then they mentioned some of the trade-offs. There's more state that's maintained in the pool. The detection has to be exhaustive. And the regular reserve split is a config time choice, like how much connection budget do you assign between them. And then the last blog post is one parse per query, no matter how many gateways. So prepared statements are great. The problem is if you have multiple gateways that clients are talking through. Ideally, they wanted to fix it in one layer, but they actually had to do it in two layers at the gateway and the multipooler. So that's great if it works as intended. So those are some recent updates for Multigres. One thing I did observe is that this seems to be a very architecturally heavy sharding solution compared to PG-Dog, which seems relatively simple. You have the one sharding pooler. But presumably that offers more benefits as long as it's not so architecturally expensive it becomes difficult to maintain. But if you're interested in sharding, definitely check out these four blog posts. Next piece of content, PG Backrust will continue. This is from pgbackrust.org. And this is David announcing the project is continuing, which he alluded to on GitHub. Well, now there's been a post at pgbackrust.org. And he mentions his sponsor, which includes AWS, Supabase, PG Edge, Tiger Data, Percona, and Eon.io. So that's awesome. He got that many supporters for his solution. So that's great. Next blog post, keeping PG Backrust open, healthy, and community driven. This is from Percona.com, and they basically describe why they're supporting and the need for the communities to support great open source projects like PG Backrust. So definitely feel free to check this out. Next piece of content, there was another episode of Postgres FM last week. This one was on PG Flight Recorder. So David Ventimiglia, my apologies if that's incorrect, joined Nick and Michael to discuss PG Flight Recorder, which is another monitoring tool that actually runs inside the database to track various statistics on it. And it is using Nick's method of how we built PGQ with multiple partition tables that collect the stats, and it uses snapshot imaging to collect the data. And David does work at Supabase, so this seems to be a Supabase-supported project, which is great. And originally, he just said, I wanted to do a simple on-the-database way of tracking weight events. But since that time, it's grown and grown to cover more and more information from various system views across the database. And you can install it on hosted platforms because it doesn't need to be an extension. Although I think he said it can be installed as well via PGTLE. But if you want to learn more about it, go ahead and listen to the episode here or watch the YouTube video down here. Next piece of content, why giant in clauses slow down your app. This is from tigerdata.com. And they're talking about a scenario where you have an in statement with a lot of characters in it. And ORMs love to do this. And they do this because you can't really do joins in some cases depending upon how you want to render the data. And this is the easiest way to do it. The problem is when you have thousands of IDs or text strings in that in list, the Postgres parser has to do a lot of work. It has to tokenize every single constant in the string, assign types to every element, and build a node tree for each item. But there's a more efficient way to do it. You can use an any array. So basically, you use any, and then you define an array inside of it. Here's an array of integers. And this is far more efficient. Like you can see planning time dropped dramatically. In this example, it dropped from 40 milliseconds down to 2 milliseconds. You have a significant reduction in memory required to store the query string, and the planner is more likely to use a bitmap index scan. Now, of course, I'm looking at this, and I wonder if this could be a planner optimization of Postgres. So if it sees an in clause, why not just convert it and use it as an any clause? Then it wouldn't require rewrite of the query. But basically, be aware that this is a potential optimization that's available to you. Next piece of content, egress problems and where to find them. This is from planetscale.com. And he's talking about the issue of downloading data. And if you have a database system and you're bringing data across the internet, you want to make the data you're querying for as small as possible. And in general, this just helps performance. So they use an example of this large table here, and you're wanting to pull data back. Again, don't use select star, use select with specific columns. So the less data transferred, the faster it will be, and of course, the less expense if you have to pay for egress of data. And if you have to pull out specific content from, say, a JSONB field, think about extracting data from that JSONB to pull it over to your application as opposed to pulling back the whole JSON blob. But if you want to learn more about that, check out this blog post. Next piece of content, partition, merge, split, once more with locking. This is from thebuild.com. And as he mentions here in Postgres 17, merge partitions and split partition features were reverted before 17 was released. However, they're back in 19, but now they have a heavier lock on them. So you can now merge partitions or split them, but there is a heavier lock on the parent table for the entire operation. And that heavier lock is an access exclusive lock. So no select or no insert or anything basically. So at least we have it, and maybe you could use it during a downtime of sorts. And maybe in the future we'll get one that doesn't require such a heavy lock. Next piece of content, welcome to Order by Jungle. This is from boringsql.com. And he goes all into order by and what happens if you order by a negative amount or a negative column and all the different ways you can order by and how it works. So if you want to learn more about that, definitely check out this blog post. Next piece of content, XID wraparounds equally evil twin. This is from richyen.com. And he's talking about, you know, we have transaction ID wraparound we need to be aware of, but we also need to be aware of multi-transaction ID wraparound or multi-exec ID wraparound. And these get generated when you have a single row being locked by multiple transactions. So this is, say, typically select for share locks or even foreign keys can generate them as well. And he said, much like the transaction ID settings, there are comparable settings for multi-exec transaction IDs. And be sure to monitor not only your transaction ID, but also your multi-exec transaction IDs to make sure you don't hit the limit. The limit is the same as transaction IDs, but interestingly, it actually freezes at a different amount. I think it freezes at 400 million as opposed to 200 million. But it gives two queries to be able to monitor their current age, which I've seen a lot of monitoring tools don't monitor this. So this is something to check periodically, especially if you're using ForShare Selects or you have foreign keys in your database. And here are exactly his recommendations. Add multi-exact monitoring. Watch your foreign key parent tables. Consider adjusting your multi-exact freeze max age if necessary. And don't ignore what you think might be unnecessary vacuums, because it could be doing multi-exact freezing. And the last piece of content, how we save 40 gigabytes of Postgres space wasted on indexes. Why? Because they were future-proofing their index decision. So this is basically proving the point that indexes are not free. They take up space. They can actually impact your insert or update transaction performance. So only use the indexes that are absolutely necessary for your application, because they were having some performance issues and he narrowed it down to actually indexes they weren't even using, and one that could be repurposed in the information captured by caching as opposed to requiring an index on the table. Oh, actually, sorry, he mentioned here the first four indexes were unused. So these were unused, which was the vast majority of the space. So definitely don't create indexes you don't need. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Be sure to check out scalingpostgres.com, where you can find all the content mentioned, as well as sign up to receive weekly notifications of each episode. There you can also find an audio version of the show, as well as a full transcript. Thanks. I'll see you next week.